Thank you, operator, and good morning, everyone, and welcome to the presentation of Global Fashion Group's results for the second quarter of 2019. I am Christoph Barchewitz, Co-CEO of Global Fashion Group, and I'm joined today by my Co-CEO, Patrick Schmidt, and our CFO, Matthew Price. We will start by taking you through a presentation of our results released this morning, and after that, we'll open it up for Q&A. I will start by giving an overview of our key financial highlights and business developments for the quarter. Matthew will then take you through the financial results in more detail. Please turn to page three of the presentation, which provides a snapshot of our financial highlights. Please note that as usual, we will focus on constant currency growth rates today. Firstly, we generated net merchandise value of 449 million during the quarter, up 23% year-on-year. Our continued commitment to the customer value proposition helped our customer base grow 15% over the same period to reach 12 million active customers. Our customers made 8.9 million net orders in the quarter, 25% more than they did in the same period last year. We achieved all this growth without compromising our path to profitability, finishing the quarter with an adjusted EBITDA margin of -0.9%. Following our IPO, we have a pro forma cash balance of 315 million. Finally, on the back of our results in the first half, we confirm our full-year guidance for 2019. To break down the key business developments behind this strong financial performance, I will focus on four main themes, beginning with our customer proposition on page four. We have already defined what a best-in-class shopping experience looks like in our markets, but this is something we continue to evolve in line with what inspires our customers. One size does not fit all when it comes to our diverse customer base and markets. This principle has always guided our assortment strategy and will be evident when I go through what we achieved here in the first half. On the one hand, access to global brands is key in our markets. We see great value in carrying exclusive assortment from these brands, which we were able to secure through collaborations with brands such as Levi's in Australia and Fila in Brazil. Both collaborations created a significant uplift in sales for these brands during their campaign periods. At the same time, there's great demand for locally relevant assortment. In Southeast Asia, we pulled off another successful Hari Raya season, the number one event in our modest wear fashion calendar. This year, we brought together over 50 designers and brands to participate under our own branded umbrella campaign, ZALORAYA 2019. This campaign saw the launch of our first male modest wear collection, designed by the most high-profile actor in Malaysia. Inspiration is not limited to the digital world, so we also held a series of offline Hari Raya events, including a mini fashion week that generated significant PR value. With around half a million modest wear items sold in Q2, Hari Raya is now a major event in our APAC region and is a testament to how we balance the best of global and local elements in our assortment. Sustainability is another topic we care deeply about, and we know our customers do as well. We launched a new way for our customers to shop by their values, called Considered at THE ICONIC in Australia. It works by allowing customers to filter our assortment for any combination of five different sustainability attributes, reflecting whatever matters the most to them. Our Considered edit already has over 400 brands. Rolling out further sustainability initiatives across our group is important to us. Next, I'd like to talk about our brand relationships on page five. Our marketplace model allows us to expand our brand relationships, and it continues to grow share, reaching 19% of NMV in the second quarter, up 5 percentage points year-on-year. We also shipped over 60% of these marketplace items out of our fulfillment centers. This strategy allows us to control the customer experience, yet hold no inventory risk, and enables brands to reach our consumers without developing their own fulfillment capabilities. This is particularly important in CIS, which has driven much of our marketplace growth this quarter. Fashion services is another fast-growing part of our business that allows us to create new revenue streams outside of our retail and marketplace business model. Fulfillment is one area where brands increasingly want to tap into our capabilities rather than do it themselves. We're now leveraging our best-in-class operations to run fulfillment for brands' own e-commerce channels. Integrating brands' own online inventory into our fulfillment network also creates a single stock pool for brands to cover online sales that are generated either directly by them or by our GFG platforms. This fulfillment model is quickly gaining traction with brands. By the end of the second quarter, we more than doubled the number of brands partners that we provide B2B fulfillment services for in CIS when compared to a year ago. The media arm of our fashion services business is also developing well, whether it be investment in bespoke campaigns or media buys across our channels. An example of this is the iconic Sport Challenge, an event sponsored by 17 top-tier brands that saw brand investment this year more than double versus last year. Let's now turn to page 6 to look at how we are scaling our operations to facilitate our growth. In Southeast Asia, we're enhancing the delivery experience to a geographically dispersed customer base by offering a service called Zalora Now that provides next-day delivery to all subscribers for a flat subscription fee. We rolled out Zalora Now in Indonesia during the second quarter and have over 65,000 subscribers across the region. Our Zalora Now subscribers also have a higher average net promoter score than the rest of the customer base in these markets. In CIS, we continue to expand our pickup point network, which now spans over 12,000 locations, of which 230 are operated by us in high-volume locations. Pickup points have become an increasingly important delivery method in CIS, being used for over 40% of shipped orders in the quarter. In Brazil, construction of our new fulfillment center is on track for an opening in 2020 and to facilitate the next phase of growth in the region. Now turning to page 7, I'd like to give an update on how our technology enables our customer experience. Our customers are predominantly mobile natives, so we have continued to invest in our apps, which generated 47% of NMV in the second quarter, 7 percentage points higher than the same period last year. Our focus on the front end has been to develop functionality that creates a step change in service and engagement. A great example of this has been our investment in improving the visual search function in Zalora, our Southeast Asia app, which has yielded significant uplifts in usage and conversion rates. Overall, we have made significant progress across key areas of the business during Q2, and I'd now like to talk about how these initiatives have impacted our KPIs. Let's now turn to page 9. In the second quarter of 2019, NMV grew by nearly 23% year-on-year to reach $449 million. Almost a fifth of that was generated through our marketplace model, with growth predominantly coming from CIS. We achieved such strong NMV growth by delivering 8.9 million orders in the quarter, up 25% year-on-year. We maintained a profitable average order value of above 50 euros, although this represented a slight decline of 2% year-on-year, driven by the APAC segment. Our active customer base grew 15% year-on-year to reach 12 million. Our customers also ordered more frequently, with average order frequency reaching 2.6 times over the 12 months to June 2019. As a result, NMV per active customer grew 7% year-on-year to reach 131, demonstrating that our customer-led strategy is paying off. We see growing frequency and earning a bigger share of our customers' fashion spend as a key opportunity going forward. Diving deeper into our regions on page 11, we can see how the growth dynamics look across each of our reported segments. Active customers grew the fastest in APAC, increasing 17% year-on-year. The APAC region has the largest population of all our segments, but includes markets with some of the lowest online fashion penetration levels, so we see significant potential in this region. Overall, NMV grew by 22% in APAC. NMV growth was the highest in Latin America at 28% year-on-year. The region, which is already our largest by size of the customer base, grew active customers by 15% over the same period. In CIS, we also saw robust growth with NMV up by 18%. All in all, we're pleased with the strength of our growth across all regions and metrics. I will now hand over to Matthew, who will take us through the remainder of our financial results for the quarter and the first half.
Thanks, Christoph. Good morning, everybody. We're pleased with our strong and consistent revenue growth. Revenues grew 16.5% to 342 million in the quarter, 15.9% to 603 for the first half as a whole. Our gross profits grew to 141 million from 128 million in the second quarter of last year. And we saw the gross margin in Q2 decline by 1.6 percentage points to 41.3%. There are three elements to this. Firstly, in Q2 of last year, we had a one-off receipt of supplier monies in the CIS that related to previous year purchases. This, and the small impact of winding down our Lost Ink clothing business, gave a one-off negative impact of 1 percentage point to our gross margin. This won't be recurring. Secondly, the growth in our marketplace business meant our gross margin benefited by 1.1 percentage points. Remember that marketplace is a 100% gross margin business for us. And finally, our LATAM and CIS businesses made investments in retail price that cost us 1.1 percentage points of gross margin at the group level in the quarter. In the first half as a whole, we made a 0.9 percentage point of margin investment through retail pricing. Our adjusted EBITDA margin in the second quarter was a loss of 0.9%, which is 0.1% lower than last year. In the first half of the year, our adjusted EBITDA margin moved forwards 0.9% to a loss of 4.8%, meaning that we're making progress on our path to profitability. We'll look in more detail at the EBITDA margin on the next slide, so I want to cover off adjustments to adjusted EBITDA. The adjustments we are making are for the share-based payments, which was 0.2 million in the first half, and the one-off costs outside the normal course of business. These relate to the costs of the IPO, historical tax adjustments, and the wind-down costs of Lost Ink. We incurred total IPO costs of 9 million euros. As the IPO occurred after the period end, we recognised 8 million of these in the interim results, of which 4 million will be offset against equity and 4 million charged to the income statement. This slide shows the components of our margin for the first half year. At 39.7%, our gross margin for the first half year was 0.6 percentage points lower than last year and was stable after adjusting for the impact of the one-off supplier recovery in the CIS. Fulfillment costs of 24.7% of revenue increased by 1.7 percentage points on last year. The June 2018 introduction in CIS of free next day delivery in major cities resulted in smaller average order sizes. Whilst this increased the fulfillment cost ratio, we are confident that the benefits to order frequency have more than been compensated for this cost. The annualization of this cost increase is now complete. We continued to deliver leverage on our marketing and our tech and admin costs as we scale the business, with 0.7 percentage points of leverage delivered in the first half year. On the next slide, we invested 15 million into our physical infrastructure in the first half of the year. This is mainly fulfillment center assets. The key project for this year, the new Brazil fulfillment center, is progressing well, and the main investment in that project is weighted to the latter part of this year and a bit into next year. We continue to invest in our technology. In the first half of the year, we capitalized a little over 40% of our technology payroll costs, so we continue to take a conservative approach to this. As well as the CapEx, the group entered into new leases, mainly for fulfillment centers. The net book value of right-of-use assets under IFRS 16 was €74.3 million at the end of the period, after depreciation of €10.5 million, largely offset by lease additions of €9.8 million. Our working capital management remains disciplined, and we had €9 million less cash tied up in working capital at the end of June compared to the same time last year. Our working capital is seasonally always a little higher at the half year than at the full year end. This slide looks at our pro forma cash. So the £315 million cash position includes the IFRS definition cash and £73 million of cash either on deposit or restricted under the terms of our RCF. The terms of the RCF changed on IPO, and so the amount of cash that's restricted reduced from €70 million to just €20 million now. Going across the slide, our operations used €29 million of cash in the first half. Changes in working capital saw a €55 million cash outflow. This is the normal seasonal working capital movement compared to the year end, plus unusually large tax receivables of €14 million in our LATAM and APAC businesses. We received net proceeds of €114 million for the disposal of our remaining stake in Namshi, our Middle East joint venture that we exited in February. And subsequent to the end of June, we received net proceeds of €186 million from the IPO. This means our pro forma cash position at the end of the period was €315 million. In addition, we have €50 million available under our undrawn revolving credit facility. I'll now look at the financial performance of each of our regions. The ongoing growth in our marketplace business means that, as expected, revenue growth lags NMV growth across all regions. APAC continued its strong growth with 18% growth in the quarter in revenue. This is supported by growth in active customers and higher NMV per active customer. The region delivered this growth rate without investing in price, and so its gross margin was stable on last year. LATAM accelerated its revenue growth to 24%, which was supported by some investment in retail price in its core Brazilian market. This resulted in a gross margin of 42%, some 1.6 percentage points lower than last year. In CIS, revenue grew almost 9% against a more normal level of comparative growth in 2018 than we had in Q1. Marketplace has doubled its share of NMV for the last year, and so the gap between NMV growth of 18% and revenue growth is the largest in this region. The reduction in gross margin compared to last year is the result of the one-off supplier rebate I mentioned earlier, and then underlying this, the region reinvested the gross margin benefit from its marketplace growth into retail price in this quarter. So overall, whilst we have some price investment trends that we need to work on, we're very pleased with the growth across all our regions. I'll now hand back to Christoph, who will talk about our outlook. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Matthew. I will now take us through page 19. We're pleased to reconfirm our full-year guidance for 2019. We expect NMV to grow 20 to 23% in constant currency, reaching 1.7 to 1.8 billion in 2019. We expect revenue above 1.3 billion. In terms of adjusted EBITDA margin, we expect a further improvement compared to last year. Finally, we are planning CapEx of around 80 million, a 10 to 15 million reduction compared to our guidance earlier in the year, reflecting certain phasing benefits and our ongoing efforts to optimize our investment plans. That now concludes our presentation, and Patrick, Matthew, and myself are looking forward to your questions. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Once again, please press star and one if you wish to ask a question. Your first question comes from the line of David Gardner. Please ask your question. Your line is now open.
Thank you very much. Two questions from me. I think you mentioned you're sort of on track for profitability. Can you give us a sense of how we should be thinking about that? What's the time horizon to profitability? And then secondly, on CapEx, I understand some of this is, as you said, phasing. I mean, the guidance for next year, I believe, was sort of a similar level to 2019. So should we now assume that next year's CapEx is sort of 12.5% higher, given some of the phasing? Thanks.
Hi, David. It's Matthew. So in terms of the profitability piece, we're pleased where we've got to at for the first half as a whole. We see us continuing to move forward. You know, as we said at the IPO, we're really looking this year to make progress on last year's outturn, where, you know, where we made a minus 4.8% margin. So we want to move forward on that. I think we've always been clear that we're not expecting to break even this year, but you can see that we want to build and have that trend. Again, looking back to what we said at IPO, we've got quite a mix in our businesses. So we've got our Australia business and all of our LATAM region was profitable last year at adjusted EBITDA level. You know, Russia was a little bit behind it. You can see that Russia is growing. We're pleased with the performance of that business. And then we've got, you know, a very planned investment into the Southeast Asia region where we know that there's tremendous market potential. That's at an earlier stage and is making losses. So that's the shape of the group, and we want to make progress on that in aggregate when we move it forward. In terms of CapEx, we said 90 to 95 million this year and next year. We're now saying 80 for this year. Yes, some of it's phasing. I think we'll probably revise the guidance for next year in detail when we talk at the full year, so I don't want to be too clear on it. I wouldn't really be seeing 12 million moving from one to another. You know, we've got much more understanding of these projects once you start getting on the ground. You know, we're much more into the detail of them. You can do the value engineering. You can really understand what's going on. And then, of course, also, we're looking all the time at our investment opportunities in total and in specific projects and making sure, frankly, we're getting the best bang for our buck on everything. So I probably wouldn't be moving 2019 up at this moment.
Great. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Michelle Wilson. Please ask your question. Your line is now open.
Hi, good morning. Two from me, if that's okay. So first of all, just on the fulfillment cost and the trend there, obviously there's a big jump up in the quarter. How should that develop over the next few quarters? And what kind of impact is the average order value having on that fulfillment cost ratio? And then the second one, just on the marketplace, it's been a big jump up to 19% marketplace mix in the quarter. So just wanted to understand how you expect that to develop going forward and whether you'll continue to reinvest the margin benefits that come out of that or if we should expect them to start dropping through to the bottom line.
Yeah. Hi, Michelle. It's Matt again. I'll take fulfillment costs and Christoph will talk about marketplace. So really the fulfillment cost increase is just as we annualize the impact of the change in free delivery in the CIS. Yep. So that pushed up essentially the cost income ratio, but actually also grew the frequency of customers. So as far as we can tell and the way we see it, this is a profitable change. This has now annualized at the end of June. Therefore, actually, we're seeing certainly into the second half the base being the run rate of what we saw in H1. So we've got that elevated level. We're not seeing any more pressure through into it. And then obviously in the second half, volumes are better. We've got some really peak selling periods, so we hopefully will get some leverage on that into H2. Hand over to Christoph.
Yeah, and Michelle, I'll tag on one point on the fulfillment cost. As I mentioned, in particular in CIS, which is certainly our segment where we have a relatively high level of fulfillment costs. We've mentioned, we've had a lot of success in the pickup points, which now 12,000 are live, of which 230 operated by us directly. Those are the most high volume ones, and that now accounts for over 40% of the deliveries in CIS, which means that we're complementing our to-the-door try-on service with that other delivery option, which also for us is a more cost-effective option. So I think that's also a way of how we're managing our fulfillment costs going forward, and that ramped up pretty quickly, quite successfully, in particular in the first half of this year. To the second question around the marketplace, I think we've in particular seen a lot of success in the second quarter in CIS around that, powered really by the fact that, as you know, we are hosting all of that inventory in our fulfillment center and therefore can really enable a best-in-class and consistent customer experience, and also are able to have marketplace and retail orders from a customer perspective be delivered at the same time and in the same way and in the same same shipment. So we're really pleased with the marketplace development. There's definitely been a bit of a catch-up in CIS because we had a bit of a slower start of marketplace relative to some other segments. So I wouldn't kind of project this kind of 5 percentage point increase that we've seen in Q2 as kind of what's going to happen over the next couple of quarters, but we certainly see further room for marketplace to increase in share. So some further share increases are what we expect.
Great. That's really clear. Thank you.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from the line of Tushar Jain. Please ask your question. Your line is now open.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, everyone. Two questions. Just first one, average order value. Did I hear correctly that most of the impact was from Asia-Pacific? If that's the case, is it more Iconic or Zalora, if you can give us some color? And is it fair to assume that LATAM average order value is broadly stable? Second, in terms of the price investment, is it the initiatives you are doing in terms of making the price more attractive, or it is more just trying to get an understanding you are a little bit more reactive to the promotional environment in those underlying regions, if you can clarify. Thank you.
So I'll take the first one, Tushar, on the AOV. Yes, you're right. You understood it correctly. We've seen broadly flat AOVs in LATAM and CIS in this quarter, and we've seen a bit of a decline in the APAC segment, and that's not weighted towards either any particular country or brand. So we've seen this both at the Iconic in Australia and at Zalora in Southeast Asia during this quarter. In terms of the price investments, I'll let Matthew comment on that.
Yeah, thanks. So I think really, so there's a couple of things which the businesses have been trying out in terms of the price investments, and I think we've got some really exciting results from them. So I'm not perceiving this as general market pull down of us. I see this as the ways we're trying out different promotional mechanics and actually being more effective. So one of the things we've been doing in a couple of the regions is actually driving some of our key campaigns away from the traditional e-commerce sales seasons, and actually the ROIs and the customer response you're getting from that is tremendous. So you see a bit of it in the discounts line, but actually we like the results. The other thing we've been doing in a couple of the regions is probably really pushing sell-through in season much harder. So actually you're getting a bit more of that pressure in discount pressure in the selling season, but we think that net-net that actually is much better than trying to shift old season, wrong season product out of the season later on in the year. So it's very much actually in our control, and we're liking what's going on.
And thank you very much. Can I just one more question? The 60% marketplace item shift through your fulfillment centers, are these add-on to the current basket, or they generally tend to be more single basket items?
We don't really see a difference there. So, I think the items per basket are consistent and not really in particular when we are offering, like in CIS, the combined basket. There's no difference in the conversion or in the dynamics in the basket that we're seeing. So it's not like the marketplace is somehow the add-on categories or something. Also because, as you know, for the customers, often not visible at all, actually, whether something is coming through a marketplace sale or a retail sale, in particular in markets like CIS, which have driven that, and the 60% that you mentioned is primarily driven by CIS, or that's the biggest chunk of that, since that model is accounting for 100% of the marketplace shipments there.
Makes sense. Cool. Thank you very much.
There are no further questions at this time. Please continue.
Great. Thank you, everyone, for joining the call this morning and your questions, and have a great day.
Thanks.